I am recording. I am here with the two founders of the Sweet Pea Gallery. We got Catriona Reed and Sophia Stewart. Sorry, I wrote it down. I've never met you before. And they have a event coming up in roughly just over a week, right?
Yes.
On the 12th to 14th, Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Sweet Pea Loves You, sort of a artist market of sorts, right?
Yes, it is a pop-up art exhibition with all of our 20 artists and a market with a lot of local makers from Victoria.
And it's taking place at the Four Corners Community Center? Is that
yes,
the name of the place?
And exactly.
Whereabouts is that?
That is at 1508 Haltane.
1508 Haltane. Cool. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, how the hell did you get started doing this? Because I like what you're doing. I think it's a pretty ambitious project, if you want to call it a project, business slash curatorial kind of project, I suppose.
Yes.
So how did you get started? I know you both sort of began collaborating this capacity at the Fridge Door Gallery in Montreal.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, that's McGill's student art gallery. So I was the director, Catriona was the curator, and we did a really good job, not to like talk ourselves up too much, but like,
yeah,
we did two great shows. out of the ashes came the phoenix of those shows. We're sure. So from there, when we both kind of went on to do our own sort of career building things after we graduated,
are you both art history majors? Is that correct?
We are.
Yes.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. So when you both, I worked a little bit of e-com and the fundraising world. Catriona did a lot of the commercial art gallery world and also like nonprofit galleries. Mm-hmm. And then with COVID, we were both in Victoria, kind of looking for something to do, really saw a big opportunity with all the great artists that were here and like wanted to do it again. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
that brought us to Sweet Pea.
I do like to see the sort of centralizing of Victoria's art community, because I've always found there's a lot of people that make art here, and the community is very like uncurated. It's chaotic. It's hard to figure out who's doing what. It's pretty much just like an Instagram black hole. And anytime I see something that puts the community together, it's very exciting.
Yeah. And especially for sort of younger artists, like we were just brainstorming one day, looking through like UVic's graduating class of 2020, and we were like, what? Like, none of these artists are signed. They're incredible. Like, we are aware of like Toronto, Montreal, like larger sort of art communities and what's selling. And the fact that these were like untapped, like brand new artists in Victoria that had no representation, we were like, we want to help you guys. Like, this is amazing. So
yeah. And yeah, I think there's such a big part of the city that is uncentralized, and almost intentionally there's so many collectives and like nonprofit institutions and studios that are there to serve a certain function for an artist, whether that's like building a profile, giving you a space to create, giving you a sense of community. But there isn't really an institution that's helping artists sell work, which is capitalistic and it is commercial, and that can sometimes be boring, but it's also important to learn how to make money from your artwork. So
I mean, I guess it's the system we're in, so you might as well find a way to make it work ethically within it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I don't think we see ourselves really working with these artists permanently, like for a long, like for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. We really like to think about it as just like the first couple of years of their career, as like they're building, we teach them how, not necessarily teaching, but we can help them build like good business development skills, like invoicing, how to run productive Instagrams, how to build a customer base, how to kind of do all of that so that they can like build and grow by themselves once they are at a certain level.
Yeah.
And the administrative work often bogs down the creative process, in my experience, you know?
Exactly.
And getting help with that is very good. And often can get you screwed over too, but
yeah. Yeah, like I don't think it's anyone's idea of a good time to like look over a contract, particularly when you're so good at painting. Like you don't need to be good at that kind of stuff. You can be good at what you're good at.
That's what we are good at. So we can do it for you.
We can manage the emails and you can like focus on what you're good at.
Yeah, I think that's very important. because you'll have great artists that go nowhere because they can't do administrative work, and you'll have terrible artists go lots of places because they can, you know?
Yeah. So
that's why I think it serves a good purpose. Tell me, like, what do you feel the importance of curation is in a gallery setting? Because I often find galleries, for the most part, to be a very difficult thing to wrap my head around because of the degree of creativity involved, if you know what I mean. Where it's like, well, yeah, I like this person's work, but how did it get here?
Yeah.
It's a big question, I know.
It's a big question. It's also, like, very contested. I'm currently in a curatorial focused master's program at York University. So we're talking a lot about this right now. I would say curation is really important for making an artist's work. Perhaps you're, like, already familiar with them, but making them more accessible to a wider audience and being able to interpret the message of that particular sort of body of work. Maybe it's, like, a particular time period that the artist has been working, and making that more digestible to a wide range of people. So that's one example.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of what we want to do with Sweet Pea, because it's not just about the artists learning how to do the business stuff. It's also about teaching people who are really intimidated and, like, don't understand a typical gallery or very traditional gallery, and kind of getting them involved in the curatorial process and breaking it down so that it is accessible for everybody, mm-hmm. whether that's just through, like, subject matter or teaching them about mediums, to really get everyone involved a little bit more informed.
Mm-hmm. So you're in a master's class about curation?
Yes.
That sounds incredibly interesting, honestly. Tell me a bit more about that.
Well, because we both studied art history, I sort of wanted to enroll in further education because I am really interested in working in museums and galleries in the future. If Sweet Pea doesn't kick off, I mean, this is the ideal route to take is Sweet Pea, but just as my backup plan, I guess. But it has a curatorial diploma and it's an art history MA.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what have you learned is what I want to know, you know?
A lot about, like, problematic curating and what sort of issues can be avoided through curatorial endeavors. For example, if the curator isn't a person of color and they are curating a show entirely by artists of color, there may be a need to bring in alternate voices, for example. That sort of thing. So it's been really useful for Sweet Pea having that sort of background knowledge kind of going while we've been making our way. So
how to operate as a curator or gallery putter together or whatever, without unintentionally being biased or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just knowing when to sort of step back, sort of looking at, like, curation as facilitation more than, like, the author of a narrative, for example.
Yeah, because I wrote that down in here. I was like, I think to operate as a curator of bodies of work, I think you need to be creative, but not be too creative about it.
Exactly.
Right. Let it speak for itself, but also present it in a way that does it justice. And that's hard. Very hard.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. I think that's really something that we've learned with Sweet Pea, is that it's all actually about the work. Like, we can do crazy Instagram graphics and, like, we can push as many emails as we want, but what it really comes down to is the actual, like, painting or sculpture connecting with somebody, mm-hmm. and that's what's really important, and it's about facilitating how to make that experience mm-hmm. present for somebody and how to help facilitate connection.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I'm curious about how you two would define your taste. I've been doing a lot of thinking and reading about the idea of taste, and how it's important to understand what you like and it's important to understand what you don't like in terms of the consumption of art or media, and figure out why, more importantly. I'm curious if you have any, either of you have any thoughts on that.
That is such a good question. And I think that it's really important. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for us as gallery directors, but also just for people to really understand what they like looking at. I start with color, which is like also how I thrift and like buy flowers and like booze. Like I like the colors of labels. I really like bright colors. That's where my eye goes. And that's really kind of where I start, which is sort of how I like to think about my taste. But I don't know. What do you like?
That's such a hard question. It's like you're never really made to think about it or like put it into words. I don't know. I like, my eye goes to color, but also to sort of like the application of paint. Like I'm a sucker for like the traditional paint on canvas. Unfortunately, even though everyone says it's dying, I think it's still like amazing if it's done right.
I don't think it's dying. I think it's got a lot of life in it. Yeah, I think you'll see it come back.
Yeah. I also think that it's a medium lots of people understand as like being valuable. Like I was pretty shocked. Pretty much all of the big works that we've sold in terms of big purchases have been like whether it's acrylic or oil on canvas. Like people are thinkers.
That's what they want. That's what I want in my house.
Yeah, like that's what you want. Like that is what people think of as high art. And I think that like kind of as like curators and people, you know, kind of semi-removed from people loving art in their homes may have thoughts about that. But like people love paint on canvas.
Yeah. Well, and it's something that only very much can only live in real life. You can take a great picture of it. You can scan it all you want, but you just can't get the whole thing. Like I've never seen a Rothko in real life, but I would love to, you know?
Hmm. You might cry.
Yeah. That's what they say. That's what they say happens with Rothko.
Yeah.
Dan Flavin, who does a lot of like neon lights, which is just like he's my favorite artist. I saw one of his works at the Houston Museum of Art, and it's literally just like some lights in like a dark corner, and like I cried, and like and it's not like away from anybody, it's literally a corner of like a dark-ish room.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, like that's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Yeah.
What's this person's name? I'll write it down. Dan.
Dan Flavin.
Flavin. Okay. Cool. Yeah, I like that kind of contemporary art. The use of light and stuff is very cool. Like, what's his name? James Turrell.
Yeah.
That stuff's cool.
Yeah. And I think it's also pulling from a lot of the same kind of things that works on canvas do. Like the idea of like space and like taking up space, I think, is a really cool function of like light and projection works. Mm-hmm. They do that, yeah. Like it is just a light bulb, but like somehow it's taking up the whole corner, and it just, yeah.
It's pure mood, you know.
Yeah, it's like everyone on TikTok has the LED lights.
Yeah.
But he was doing that in like the 90s, I guess. So.
Hell yeah! My girlfriend's little brother just got the lights from the TikTok
video. Oh, nice!
So exciting.
Yeah.
We like the Google Home light bulbs, so it's like the millennial version.
Yeah, my mom's got those too. Yeah. Yeah. So tell me about how you developed like a relationship with art. It's a heavy question too, but I always wonder where it starts, if you will, because I've been thinking also a lot about like medium and how people settle on a medium, and I think curation counts as a medium, if you will, as well as like sort of academic writing, which I'm sure as art history majors you did a lot of. You know, Chicago style footnotes and stuff. I think there's a lot of creativity to that.
Still going, yeah.
Yeah. I'm in that world right now, and I'm having a good time, honestly. But yeah, like, where did it begin? What was, if there was any eureka moments or any works of art or you know, influential people in your life?
Want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. I was really lucky to kind of grow up around a lot of art. I grew up in downtown Toronto, and so we were like right down the street from the ROM and two blocks three or four blocks away from the AGO. So my mom used those institutions like daycare. So I was like always there, and we were there all weekend. We were always in the, like, the little craft centers. And I just continued to spend a lot of time there growing up. I very specifically remember a Catherine the Great show at the AGO. Like 15 years ago, that I went with my like very cool godmother, who was like a professor at OCAD, so we got to go behind the scenes. And it was just like, being like a 5-year-old or however old I was, just like seeing all those like the crazy gorgeous art, and it was just gold. It was like everything I thought as a 7-year-old was like the coolest thing on earth was like all there. And I think that really hooked me. So now I'm here.
So it's in the DNA. It's like right in the DNA.
Yeah. I was just very lucky to grow up around a lot of it. And I think that's kind of why because I feel like I can understand it. I can kind of speak in that language. And I think that so many other people love art and can really connect with it, but weren't able to grow up with that same. They were down the street from the AGO with some of the best art in the world and definitely in the country. So I think that can be really important, building language around like taste and like what you like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's rare for, particularly like the gallery art world, to develop a relationship with it in our generation at a younger age. I think it usually comes with a bit of academia, whereas we're immediate feedback of music and television, I think, is the art that we often lean into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's one thing that really drew me to Sweet Pete was people refer to people under the age of 30 as like the white whale of the current art scene, because like no one is buying fine art. Like nobody wants to go into a gallery anymore. Like young people have nothing, they don't want to do it. There used to be rich people in New York and like people that were buying big old houses in like Iowa that wouldn't want to buy fancy art, but that's just like not happening anymore. And I think like I wanted to solve that problem. And so like coming from the econ world, I worked at Essence. They do like Yeezy sneakers and like fancy t-shirts and stuff like that. And that's what is successful now. Like people can connect with that on social media and they want to spend money on that. And so kind of connecting those two things together, I saw as a bit of an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never thought of using apparel, if you will, as a way to kind of reconnect back with visual art.
And I think coming from like luxury retail, like that's the same experience as you would get in the gallery. They just dress it up in a different outfit and make it seem scary. So yeah. I think changing that Dollar environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean like a Yeezy t-shirt versus Sweet Pea t-shirt. Sweet Pea t-shirt will be cheaper.
And much more original.
Yeah. And it's made in Victoria.
I bought one. I did.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Yeah.
We have it already. So
my brother just was like, you should buy this. And I was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. They're good.
Kate Bush, gotta love it.
Gotta love it.
Yeah.
How about you, Kat? How about you?
Yeah, my first baby photo is like me covered in like paint with like paintbrushes scattered everywhere. Like my parents, I think, just like predicted that I would be in the arts in some way. So they like threw me into painting classes from like the age of 5. I don't even know. There's paintings all over my house that are awful and so embarrassing. But I did like hands-on, like I was really interested in painting all the way through high school. And I did some painting during my undergrad as well. But it's hard to be an artist. It's a lot of discipline and I don't really have that discipline. So it was also studying art history at McGill that sort of opened up this whole other world to like language, describing art in these new ways that I had never encountered before. I think it was just sort of a nice switch and sort of like a more practical in my head switch to study art history and then see where that would take me. Just went into, started working at the Art Gallery of Great Victoria in 2017 and then worked there on and off for about 3.5 years between school and a bunch of other commercial galleries. But the reality is they're very, there's a way that things are done in these commercial galleries. And I also knew that like the not-for-profit sector sort of was a little bit difficult to operate in. It's a little bit disheartening sometimes when you always need to be applying for the next grant. So I think SVP is like a really nice middle ground, especially because we don't operate on the conventional 50-50 gallery split. Like we give our artists 60% and we only take 40. So we're trying to sort of incorporate our awareness of the not-for-profit sector, and like we've given a lot of donations to like Raven Trust and the Ancient Forest Alliance. So yeah, sort of a long tangent to the question, but there you have it.
I think that's cool. I don't know. I think not, because it's one thing to have artistic ambitions and love it, and then to just go, nah, I'm not good at this, and give it up completely. I see plenty of people that I think have a bright future creatively ahead mm-hmm. of them, completely abandon it. But the more you learn, you know, if you'd probably be a better painter now because you know so much more about art if you were to pick it up today.
You would think, but actually.
I don't know, that's a debate. Maybe I could ask how you guys think about it. I think about it all the time is, do you think, this is tangenting, it's just something I thought of. Do you think that knowing more about a given medium or something, like let's say you want to play an instrument and you listen to a shit ton of music to get better at it and learn about the history of it and stuff, do you think that would make you a better artist? Or do you think that you have to be specifically disciplined to the practice of the medium?
I think it all depends on what you're trying to create. And I am partial to the belief that like there are just some people who are like makers, like some people who are just like really good at doing things. Maybe that's a bit simplistic, but like some people are just like good at that. Like some people can just really, they can draw something, like the physical world just like makes sense for them, whether it's like through music or through painting. And I think that there is sometimes just a bit of a gene to it. Mm-hmm. But I personally do not find that my art history degree has given me any artistic talent. I never have, never will. I can barely even collage, which requires very little talent. but that's just me. That's just my take. I don't think that's my skill set.
I don't know. I kind of think like it can either like inhibit your creativity or make you make like even more intelligent paintings, if that makes sense. Like you can yeah. get to the point where you're thinking too much about what you're making, and that can stop you from making something that's like meaningful and authentic,
expressive. Yeah,
yeah. So can be helpful, but to a certain extent, I think.
I agree and I disagree. I think it's good for ideas. I think you know, being heavily influenced is good for ideas. I'm kind of against starting with a blank canvas. I think that's like,
I have to doodle all over any empty notebook because I just can't handle it. Then I can't do anything.
I have just scribbles all over this just to, you know, get my brain going. But I don't know. Like starting with a blank canvas is like a good and very pure and kind of spiritual like way to approach like creativity. But I think if you feel inhibited by that, you might as well take influence, you know?
Yeah. I think it also really depends on the kind of the work people are doing. I think about our artists and kind of seeing the work they've done since they've signed on in August, when we've kind of gotten work in progress images. And it's been really interesting to see what they're doing now, whether that's like creating more smaller scale work, like literally just influenced by what sales, by what sells, excuse me, or kind of pushing into new places, which has been really cool to see. And kind of taking inspiration from different parts of their lives. Like one of our artists has moved, and so now she has a garden. And so she's doing this like botanical watercolor series, which is very different than the work she's shown us previously. And that's been really cool, seeing that growth and that change.
Can you tell me a little bit about the process of procuring artists. That sounds, you know, maybe the wrong word, but of yeah, how you find people, and how you work with them, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was like kind of the miracle of this whole thing was the great artist that we got. We decided, like, I think we bought our email like mid-July, and then we just kind of put out literally a Google form to see who was interested. We reached out to a couple people, particularly the new grads coming out of the BFA program at UVic, mm-hmm. Just because we had seen their exhibition and were just like blown away by the talent, and also knew that they weren't in the process of being signed anywhere, which was pretty shocking to us. Mm-hmm. So we kind of did a few little outreach pieces, but we then asked for, like, I think just a general submission from them. So we got to look at some works as well as like kind of their CVs and looked at social media.
What is a CV?
A curriculum vitae. It's like basically all the shows that they've done. Okay. As an artist. Yeah.
Like a resume.
Like a resume, yeah. Yeah, for artists, yeah.
Yeah, and a little bit. Some, I think one of them included works that they had sold, but I think for the most part, our artists haven't really worked commercially before, so they haven't sold works, which has been really cool. Mm-hmm. And then once we got all the submissions, we just hung out on my couch and like went through a PowerPoint and to see which ones drew us to them, as well as kind of like made sense, sort of like, like in terms of a broad gallery picture. So making sure we were kind of checking boxes in terms mm-hmm. of price points and mediums.
But we were super impressed because all we did was send out this form to a couple of people directly and didn't do any marketing or anything. And we got like over
maybe
like,
one promoted post, like maybe.
Yeah. And we got like over 45 like international submissions from like literally like South America, like all over the States. Like Iceland, I don't even remember, Finland, like people want representation. Like artists need galleries to represent them, period.
Yeah. It's and amazing. We were so impressed by the quality of people we got like within mm-hmm. Canada, particularly within Victoria. Like that was really, like it blew us away.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was a very important part of it.
Yeah, so then we narrowed it down to like 20 artists. Because we were like, there's so many amazing ones to choose from. We wanted a smaller number originally, but we couldn't do it.
Yeah, we just couldn't.
Yeah.
The administrative world taking over. That's too many. Yeah. That's too many people.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
Yes.
Sometimes it can be a lot, but so yeah, we narrowed it down, and then we sent out contracts, and from there we got our artists.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And is the focal point on it being local, or is it?
No, that was just sort of a hub. We were operating in Victoria at the time, so, and we knew a lot of people
and
here.
Honestly, in Victoria, there's less of a, there's no commercial support for young artists, whereas mm-hmm. in markets like Vancouver, Toronto, there's quite a few galleries that are doing something similar to what we're doing. So mm-hmm. I think that was also a big part of it. Mm-hmm. It was just, we knew that the appetite was here. We do represent artists in Vancouver and Toronto and Montreal, as well as like Brooklyn and LA. So we have a good spread, but mm-hmm. yeah, mostly.
I think that's good too. That gets the word out, right?
Exactly.
Especially operating, I mean, especially in COVID, like operating mm-hmm. online as your biggest means of sharing mm-hmm. the work, I assume. Like,
yeah,
you can't just be in Victoria.
Yeah, and I think that's something we're also looking forward to building a lot, hopefully post-COVID, if this ever comes to an end, is really kind of connecting people all across the country, you know, whether that's Vancouver or Toronto, Montreal, is just really kind of building and seeing what's available in terms of artists and also customers.
Mm-hmm. We're hoping to do another call out in the summer. After we've been sort of operating for a year. It's crazy.
We wanted to like do it first and then see if we actually could. And then.
Looks like you can.
So far,
yeah, so
good.
So good.
Yeah.
I think it's good to operate on your own means instead of taking your education and trying to run under someone else's machine.
Yeah.
I think that could be soul sucking. And also like what you were saying earlier, Kat, about how things operate in a specific way. That's just, time just does that because they see it worse. you can figure out how to do it a different way that's better.
I think that's something I really saw, was just that, like, commercial art galleries right now are not functioning as they should be, because they're not getting young people, and we're gonna be 50 and we're still not gonna want to pay like tons of money to go stand around with fancy stupid people and like in a space that isn't fun, with art that isn't fun and interesting. Like, it's gonna be dead. So I think we really saw the opportunity to kind of do something new in lots of different ways.
Cool. Is there any contemporary artists, whether there are people that are working with you guys or not, that you're very excited by? I'm particularly interested in the visual world. That's my Achilles heel of art. So anything you could turn me on to.
A little rubric, or not a rubric. What's it called? Oh, the readings?
A little syllabus?
To look at?
I've taken 2 art history courses. That's my knowledge.
Really?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
What eras were they?
I took modern art history.
Okay.
And then I took one called visual culture and performance art. I took 3.
Nice.
Oh, that's pretty good. A performance art. That's
wish
fun.
We had one of those at McGill. We did not.
You didn't have a performance art class.
No, it was kind of just involved in every random contemporary art
class. If a course was taught like for post 1945, mm-hmm. then it was included. But I mean, for the most part, it was like Renaissance painting, which is like fine with me. I just want to look at Renaissance paint and like eat that blue all day, but it's not the most diverse education for sure.
Yeah, I never developed a taste for that, the Renaissance stuff. I don't know why. It just seems like, it's just impressive. That's all it is to me. I'm like, wow, you did a good job. Good for you. It doesn't make me feel anything. I don't have that. I don't know.
I just like the Italian Renaissance.
Okay.
I like the blue, like the powdery blue. It just gets me with like the pink. I'm into
that color.
Yeah. That's and there's some, also I would say like the worst Renaissance art is the stuff that they like actually show you and teach you about. Like the coolest stuff, like there's really cool, weird, there's like these, I know you asked about contemporary art, but there's like boob church covered in boob art in Sicily. And it's just like they're not showing you that, but it's way more fun than like anything Michelangelo ever did. Well, that's not exactly true, boob church, and it's just full of boob paintings. Like, cool. Yeah, it's fine.
Put that in a syllabus. Contemporary, though, I can't, like, we can't choose from our roster. I want to, like, I would name every single one of them. Outside of our artists, though, like, I don't even know, Flora Yunkanovic or something. Can't pronounce her last name. She is a favorite of mine.
Mm-hmm. I think I look more towards like other curators who put together really cool rosters of work, whether that's
that's one of my questions in here also.
So. Yeah, I really love Museum Mami on Instagram at Museum Mami. She's also like a great place to start. Mm-hmm. She used to work at the Met in New York and has since left. She did their social media for a long time, like when she was like the only social media staff at the Met. So like 10 years ago. And she's just really cool and does a really good job curating. She does have a pretty big focus on like Black American artists, but just really takes this incredible lens. Like she just is a really great curator of things. Like she has really great taste and is really good at teaching you about things. So she's who I would point to. She's great references. She's great.
I've heard the name thrown around before, but I haven't checked it out.
Yeah, Kimberly Drew is her actual name. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend her in terms of a curator. But contemporary artists. Yeah, I mean, our roster has some great, great people. I'm particularly drawn to Cassia Powell's work. Mm-hmm. I think it's also a great kind of entry point for people. It's really bright colors and it's really kind of modern subject matter, which I think kind of plays well with people. Also, Ella McQueen Dens is another one of our artists, and she has a big background in like street art, so graffiti, and it's like very haunting images, but her whole kind of style is kind of really, really based on like graffiti, which is really cool, the way she uses colors.
She's also doing these like movable puppets. that we're going to have on display at our show on Valentine's Day weekend. So
yeah, I think those are really cool. They really nicely blend like traditional art with something new, something you can interact with, which I think is really, really cool.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I want to say Cassidy Lutine as well. Her work is one of the first that we came across and we were so blown away. She has this series called Study of the Form, and she has like poked through the canvas so that it's no longer a flat canvas. And those were the inspiration for our first tote bags that we made with her, and they sold really well.
She's like a great kind of sculptural eye. So she's doing a series she got a grant for the Canadian art.
Like people? Canada Arts Council.
Canada Arts Council, that's what it is.
Canada Art Grant Givers.
Yes. Yes, yes.
There's only one.
The big people in Ottawa who decide what is art. And they're really, she does really cool things with like actual physical canvases. So like she folds them over, she kind of rolls them and like cuts them in really interesting ways that I think is a very interesting, really incredible thing to look at.
But there's so many more. Like
there's so many more. Rudra has like great big, kind of thick, heavy,
like unstretched canvas with paint dripping. Yeah.
I think Cassandra Klassen is another one of our artists. She does
a lot of cast names.
Yeah.
We had, yes, it was funny when we were first learning who all of our artists were going to be. We were like, there's a trend.
It's like Cassia Chantel, Cassandra. I'm sure there's like more that I'm forgetting. Yes, lots of names. But I think Cassandra Klassen is a great, in terms of a beginner collector, her works, I think they really go well in so many different spaces. She has like good use of white space and really great color palettes in her work. So they would, you can buy it and you can put it in your bedroom. And then in 2 years when you move, you can put it in the living room, and they're a great scale. So I think that's a great, I think she's a great person that we have. Her work is very popular. So many artists that are doing really great things.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think about other people who get me all fired up. I'm just a sucker for like Renaissance. I'm like, I can tell you some Renaissance painters.
Please go for it.
No,
that's changed my mind on Renaissance paintings.
Well, I'm gonna look at my Instagram feed very briefly and find what artists I like right now, because I am a contemporary person. I can do this. What about in your courses? Are you studying anyone that you're interested in?
Always when you ask that the name escapes us, you know.
It's anomia, that's the word for that, I think.
Oh,
you know something, but it's just not there.
We'll get back to you on this one.
Yes, we can send you we can link that in the show notes.
Yes, yeah,
I can do that. Do a Google Doc. I can move on. I don't need to. Yes.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to broadcast to the world?
Anything come to Sweepy Loves You on February 12th to 14th.
You can find all that info on our website, sweepygallery.ca.
Or our Instagram. Follow us on Instagram.
At sweepy.gallery. That's us. I think and we're always interested to see and hear about like what people want to be seeing in terms of contemporary art, and like what kind of ways people are looking to get art into their life. That's a big kind of push for us with like the merch, like the t-shirts. We also have some keychains that are coming out and tote bags. And I think that's something like I'd love to hear feedback on like how people would want to see art reflected in their life in a way that isn't like an $800 painting, because that's,
I'm curious about interactivity in and art meeting. That's something I'm very curious about. So I'll give you that.
Well, Ella McQueen-Denz has some great works for you. And I think that's something we're really looking forward to exploring as well once we can do things in real life. We very much picked our first roster for people whose works would kind of work in a digital space. But there were a couple people that applied and that we were very interested in, who do a lot of really cool work with like video games. And we have an artist who also works a lot with GIFs. Anyway, yeah, I think those are really cool and interesting things. Mm-hmm. And we look forward to exploring them more in the future.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I think art's only going to get bigger. I really do.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think meet as long as we care less and less about medium, art will get bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that so much of it is about breaking down the wall of thinking that like art only needs to be one thing, when really art, the term art is kind of meaningless, but it carries weight. So
exactly,
using that, just yeah. Just having people be more creative and want to have more creativity in their lives, I think.
Yeah, hell yeah. Okay, well, thanks for chatting with me.
Thank you.
It was nice to meet you.
Thanks so much.
Stop recording.